go. Now holla if you hear me though. It's the Rich Keefe Show. Here we go, you're now rocking with the Rich Keefe Show on your radio. You're about to hear the chronicles from a topical, comical, and knowledgeable Boston sports talker, dropping it hotter than a tropical climate. Breaking news, he supplies it, and you want the truth? Scoops Keefe will find it. Scoops. He's talking about all the sports, and he's also a hashtag dork. And the father of two sweet daughters, the leader of your squad for you evening marauders and night commuters. Tune in and sit tight, 6 to 10, more like 6 to midnight, ow. The mic's hot on the Night's Watch crew. Celtics, Bruins, Pats, and Red Sox too. Doing this since the Rich Keefe Project. Now he's got podcasts and Twitch stream content. KWFE on WEEI. It's the Rich Keefe Show, so here's your guy.
All right, welcome into a Friday. Oh my God, Friday night edition. What happened? Did I swallow a bug? It's the Rich Keefe Show here on WEEI. Not prepared for that at all. You can join the program, maybe help me out. How about the voice? 617-779-7937. You can text the program 37937. And of course, the ever growing Twitter and Instagram pages at Rich Keefe Show. A lot of hot content. Some of it's too hot for the radio. So you're going to want to head over to Twitter and Instagram to keep up with everything over there. It's a free follow. There's no fee associated with that. At Rich Keefe Show. And it's NFL Conference Championship Weekend. It is Royal Rumble Weekend. And we'll get to all those things coming up. Also, my guy Ryan Davey from the Hashtag Dork Podcast will join us in the 8 o'clock hour. But I want to start with the Celtics from last night, because we were watching the game while we were in here, and we got off the air. They were still playing. They went into overtime, and like an idiot, I took Celtics -8.5. I thought they were going to bounce back from those two losses in Florida and just mop the floor with the Knicks. They did not. Although early on in the game, it looked like they might. They got out to a 15-point lead, and you're like, all right, here we go. They were pretty healthy with, again, with the exception of Marcus Smart, everybody else was back for them, and you thought they were going to be in good shape. Then they were down 13, and you're like, oh, this doesn't look very good. And then they have a good fourth quarter, and by they, I mean Jason Tatum has a really good fourth quarter. They force overtime. They're up in the overtime, and then they ultimately lose in the overtime, 120-117. So credit to Ben, who hit the over in that game, needed overtime to do so, but was able to get it. The -8.5, no chance. No chance at all. Big night for Julius Randle on the other side. Big night for Jalen Brunson. And the New York Knicks, who aren't bad, right? Like, this isn't the Orlando Magic, but this is also maybe a potential first-round opponent for the Celtics if they end up being the 8 seed and the Celtics are the 1, or maybe even a 2-7. And I say that because the Celtics are only 2.5 games up on Philadelphia right now for the number 1 spot. They still have the best record in the NBA. So even a 3-game losing streak sort of goes to show you the kind of cushion that they had built, where a 3-game losing streak, still the best record in the NBA. I know the Nuggets are close, but at 35-15 through 50 games, Celtics are the best team. So I think it'd be crazy to freak out about a 3-game losing streak, especially when you go back to the first game on this losing streak to the Orlando Magic. You don't have Time Lord, Marcus Smart, Malcolm Brogdon. Second game against the Miami Heat, you don't have Marcus Smart, Al Horford, Malcolm Brogdon, Jaylen Brown. And you return home, and everybody plays with the exception of Marcus Smart. So you're missing your starting point guard for these 3 games. And this isn't, like I said, the last time they lost 3 straight games, it was 2 to Orlando and then 1 to Indiana. So if you're just looking at the opponents, this version is a little bit better. But that doesn't mean you just ignore it completely and just say, whatever, you know, loss is a loss. Like, I think there's things that you can sort of dig in there and kind of pick apart. You know, with Orlando, it was a really bad third quarter. It was Jason Tatum having to leave the game for a little bit, everything going on to Jaylen Brown, and he played poorly. He turned it over and was a mess. Bad third quarter, they lost that game. The Miami Heat game, we spent a lot of time talking about Joe Mazzulla and like, hey, you going to use a timeout? Maybe mix in a timeout. You're not going to carry those over the next game. And maybe they would have run something a little bit better. Tatum also had some bad turnovers in that one, right? Not letting him off the hook. So not a great finish for Tatum or Joe Mazzulla. And they lose that game. Now, last night against the New York Knicks, again, big swings, right? They're up by 15, down by 13. Then you get into overtime. And ultimately, Jaylen Brown misses 2 free throws with the game on the line. And Jaylen Brown has improved as a free throw shooter or just a shooter overall. I mean, you remember, and one of the reasons why, this is forever ago, but one of the reasons why I didn't love him coming out of college and why I think a lot of people kind of questioned the pick was he was a pretty bad shooter, right? Really good athlete, as he still is, but couldn't shoot at all with his 1 year at Cal. And he's changed that around. He is a significantly better three-point shooter than I ever thought he was going to be. You know, for this season, he's shooting 33%, which is down. In fact, it's one of his worst years shooting three. But his compared to what he did at the college level, now to here, it's better. He's more of a threat from out there. Free throws. So I was surprised to see that he's shooting 78% at the line this year, which is a career high. So kind of an odd year where his three-point percentage is the lowest it's ever been. His free throw percentage is the highest it's ever been. You know, he came in his first 3 years in the league, Jaylen Brown was shooting in the 60s for at the line. And so last night, 7.1 seconds remaining in overtime, Celtics are down one, Jaylen Brown on the line. You're like, all right, here we go. The guy is probably going to be named an all-star next week, one of the leading scorers in the NBA. Put him on the line. Not close. You know, misses the first one real short, misses the second one. And again, you can tell with these guys, like, you know, some of them, it doesn't matter. Game on the line, whatever, ice in the veins kind of thing. Others are, it's easy to shoot a free throw, you know, in the middle of a second quarter in a game in January. But overtime, down one, oh, it's a little bit different. It's funny because we had people complaining about Tatum and saying that, you know, Brown's more clutch than Tatum. Well, I'm not saying he hasn't had his clutch moments, but last night is one that does not go in his favor. Again, at the line, you have a chance to at minimum tie it. It was 7 seconds. Who knows what the Knicks would have come up with? Maybe you have double overtime at home and maybe you find a way to grind out a win there, but he can't buy either free throw and they end up losing to the New York Knicks. And again, a good game by the Knicks. Give them credit. You know, they got really good performances out of a couple of guys there. And on a night where Jason Tatum was named an all-star starter, 35 points, 14 rebounds. And if it wasn't for his performance in the fourth quarter, that game's not even going to overtime. In the fourth quarter, Tatum scored 11 points, didn't turn it over. Also had a couple of rebounds and an assist. So, like, he was great. And not, again, you know, maybe I do like plus minus because I say I don't really care about plus minus, and yet I think it's certain nights it is pretty relevant. Last night, and again, overtime game, it was decided by 3 points. Time Lord, plus 21. Like, how are you a plus 21 in a game that is that close? He ended up playing 36 minutes. He left the game at one point after an alley-oop and was, like, kind of looking at the knee, and you're like, all right, here we go again. He still terrifies me, and I think, is it gotten to the, like, Gronk level where, like, every time Gronk would take a hit for a while, you're like, is he getting up? Oh, he's good. Is he grabbing something? No? He's good? Okay. Time Lord's the same way. And the way he plays, he's either contesting shots, throwing down alley-oops, you know, blocking shots. So he's jumping up and down a lot. And then you see him, the way he lands, and sometimes it just doesn't look right. And so I'm always a little bit worried about Time Lord. And I think that's just, as a Celtics fan, how we're going to have to live. It's like, all right, how's Time Lord doing? It's like, day to day, minute to minute. But overall, he had a classic Time Lord game, 8 points, 12 rebounds, crazy plus minus. The bench let him down last night. My guy Grant Williams, minus 18. There's 21 minutes. He was like losing a point every minute that Grant Williams was out there. So wasn't his finest performance. And they lose to the Knicks. So again, I don't think anybody should lose their mind. The last time the Celtics had a three-game losing streak, they responded by winning their next four, including the Milwaukee Christmas Day game, including a win against the Clippers. So I'm not panicking. And again, they were pretty undermanned in these games. Last night, again, I know it was just Marcus Smart, but it'll be interesting to see how they respond now, right? There's another opportunity for Joe Mazzulla. Questions started to really rise up with Mazzulla after the Miami game. How are things going to turn around now? Who's gonna put the team on their back? I feel like it's going to be Tatum, right? Like, isn't that the obvious answer? Tatum, fourth quarter last night, seemed like he was up for the challenge. They got up to a good start in overtime. Kind of felt like, all right, they're gonna win this game. And all right, close one with the Knicks, but you snap the losing streak. And then the Knicks, they come storming back, obviously win the game. So Lakers coming up tomorrow. And then they got some time off, and they got Brooklyn Wednesday, Phoenix the 1 week from tonight. So they stretch it out a little bit. No back-to-backs for a while, which I think will be good because, first of all, everybody's hurt. Everybody's playing with something. Brown obviously is dealing with something. Jason Tatum even is dealing with something. Again, no excuses, right? No excuses. Play like a champion. Rule, was it 76? So that's not going to be something they can use. Every team in the league has a bunch of guys who are hurt. So nobody really cares. And if somebody's down, then so be it. But I thought they could win. And Marcus Smart's supposed to be out about a week or two. And, yeah, they could use him back, obviously. But you can't say this team is deeper than everybody else, and then one guy goes down, and now all of a sudden you're using that as an excuse. So they do need to play better. But at 35 and 15, still pretty ridiculous. And they just need to kind of push through this part of it, and I think they're going to be fine. You know, it's funny, both winter sports teams, and the Bruins also lost last night. Bruin, which is a shocker. In fact, was it the first time both these teams lost on the same night since like 4 weeks ago? And I also don't think either team has lost in regulation on the same night all season long. But I don't know what it's going to take to freak out about either team because they've set out with such a high bar, like right out of the gate. And it's enough of a sample size too, right? They've both played about 50 games. So I think we kind of know what they are. But neither's perfect. Neither's guaranteed a title or anything like that. I'm not suggesting that. But you got to see them turn around a little bit more. And we'll see again. Three-game losing streak is currently, it's tied for the longest they've had all season. So if they lose tomorrow to the Lakers, and depending on how it plays out, or maybe you get a little bit more of an eyebrow raise. Philly's having a really good month. Joel Embiid's kind of putting himself back in the MVP conversation. They're chasing him down. I don't know if best record is the be-all, end-all, but it seemed like they were ahead of everybody for a while. And now you've gotten some of these other winning streaks from other teams, and they're closing the gap just a little bit. So your thoughts on the Celtics and Jaylen Brown in overtime, you know, are you worried at all? Is it going to take a lot more to worry you? Or you're like, you know what, right now, hey, three losses in a row. I don't care who was in or who was out. It's still three losses, and we haven't seen that only one other time all season long for the Boston Celtics. So C's are on the table. If you want to get into the Bruins as well, a very rare loss, although Tampa's a good team, last night. 617-779-7937 is the number to jump aboard. We'll have plenty on the conference championships because there's been so much stuff going on this week. We've barely talked about Bengals and Chiefs and 49ers and Eagles. So we'll have a lot to unpack with that. We'll get to some, we'll pick those games, player props, all that kind of stuff as well. So again, 617-779-7937 is the number to jump aboard here on the Rich Keefe Show. Right now, here's Ben with what's trending.
This is the Rich Keefe Show on WEEI. WEEI.
And streaming everywhere on the Odyssey app.
I just got to be better, to be honest. Tonight was just a rough game, you know, and I'm a better basketball player than I played today. And those two missed free throws kind of embodied like the whole game, you know, for me. Didn't really get it going, didn't give my team enough energy to win. And that's what happens when you don't come out and give your best. And I'll be better.
Jaylen Brown, after missing a couple of free throws with the game on the line last night in overtime, Celtics lose to the Knicks back here on the Rich Keefe Show, WEEI. And he wasn't good all game. Like we kind of highlighted 7.1 seconds down by one, Jaylen Brown at the line, and he just misses both badly. And then the Knicks get the ball. They go to the line, they salt it away, and they win by three. But he's right. It wasn't good. He played 41 minutes. He was 8 of 22 from the field. 1 of 8 from three. He was a +3 in the game, but finished with 22 points. But, yeah, a lot of misses, and those free throws were brutal. And he was actually 5 for 5 prior to those two misses at the line in the game, but fell short, and the team has now lost three straight games. I misspoke. The Bruins and Celtics haven't lost in regulation on the same day since January 6th of last year. So it's been a long time. Both teams have been quite good. Let's go to the phone, 617-779-7937. Let's go to Robbie in Norwell. What's going on, Robbie?
Hey, Rich. A couple things on Jaylen Brown and on Tatum.
Okay.
Both very important. The first, let's start with Jaylen, okay? I know you're reading off the numbers as far as Tatum's percentages, 70% this year, 66% at the line last year. How about looking at his clutch free throw shooting the last 3 years with when there's less than 2 minutes in a game? It's probably about 10%. Like when he missed that first shot, yeah. I said the second shot has about
no chance.
5%
chance. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. No, the way he missed the first one, I'm with you. You're like, no, there's no way in hell he's making the next one.
He short arms it, you know.
Yep.
All right, that's it with him now. Tatum, okay. Larry Bird, when he played, when Rogers 1 year, they didn't have a point guard, so Bird almost made fun of the coach, like, why am I a point forward all of a sudden?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and he marked it. And Tatum is like, why is he? He's a decent ball handler for a four, right? But why is he bringing the ball up at all? We have three really good point guards. We have Marcus, we have Pritchard. They're all great ball handlers.
Yeah, right? But Smart's been out the last three games, right? So that's part of it. You're starting point guards out. But I'm with you. Brogdon should shoulder more of that, but Brogdon's still coming off the bench. So, I mean, would you rather Derek White or Jason Tatum bring it up more?
I'd rather have Derek, to be honest with you.
Okay.
Facilitate. Mm-hmm. If Tatum wants to move on, like Ray Allen, remember Ray? I mean, he'd move on all the time to get the shots. If it comes down to a little bit like he doesn't want to do all the running around to get those open shots, but he's going to get better shots. He's going to get open more, right? And it's going to free up more of the team, too. Tatum bringing the ball up, it turns into iso ball. It's so predictable. It's going to kill us against Golden State or whoever gets to the finals against us. It really will.
Well, I'll give you that, Robbie. Yeah, thanks for the call. I'll give you that. Now, again, I wouldn't compare him to Ray Allen, though. Like, I think his game is very different. And his game, you know, maybe a little bit closer to, say, Paul Pierce. And we ran into that a lot, where he would run the iso ball, especially before he got really good teammates around him. And it was like, all right, Paul Pierce is going to have the ball. And 20 seconds later, he's going to put up a shot. And I don't think Tatum is quite to that degree. I think he's probably a little bit better passer, too, than Pierce is. I don't have as big of a problem with that. And I think part of it, too, is like, you know, a couple of nights ago. Now, last night, they weren't nearly as undermanned as they were against the Miami Heat, where, you know, who is Tatum supposed to pass it out to? Is it Derek White shooting threes or Peyton Pritchard shooting threes? Like, who do you want him to pass it to? That was a problem even going back a couple of years ago. But now, yeah, they need to move the ball a little bit more, because there are times where the Celtics look almost unbeatable the way they zip the ball around. And then there are other times, you're right, the ball gets a little bit stuck and it's not great. Going back to Brown, you're right. I think there is a big difference. Like we said, game on the line or close game, 2 minutes to go or in overtime shooting free throws versus first quarter, it's an and one, and everything's, you know, going great for the team. And that's why, yeah, Jaylen Brown at least overall has worked on it, and he's shooting a better percentage at the line than he was before, right? He came into the league and he was shooting, what was it, 60%, 68, then he dropped down to 64, and now he's up to 78. I still don't want him with the game on the line at the free throw line. There's a bunch of guys you would rather have shooting free throws than Jaylen Brown, and hopefully in a situation where the game is on the line, they find a way to get the ball to Malcolm Brogdon or Jason Tatum. You know, so let's say they double-team Tatum, which is what they always do, which is also what led into some of those turnovers against Miami. But if they lead there, you have a lot of other guys like Derek White, even Grant Williams, as much as I crap on him sometimes, those guys are all better free throw shooters than Jaylen Brown. But again, game on the line, give me Tatum, give me Malcolm Brogdon. I think those are the two guys you'd want the ball to. I mean, going back to the 08 Celtics, remember every time it was close, get it away from Rondo and make sure that Ray Allen had the ball. If you have to go to Pierce, fine, but Ray Allen was definitely the guy that you wanted. Let's go to Brian in New London. He joins us next here on the Rich Keefe Show. What's up, Brian? Hello, Brian. Going once, going twice, thrice. He wanted to talk about Matt Patricia, which, again, been kind of quiet on the Matt Patricia front. It sounds like it's up to him, which I find kind of odd. It might be up to Matt Patricia what he's going to do. Although his role of offensive coordinator is obviously gone. Bill O'Brien is that, and the QB's coach. And apparently the latest, I saw Burt Breer recently tweeting about Ryan Wendell, of course, former Patriots offensive lineman. And I guess he is now with the Buffalo Bills. It looks like the Patriots are going to meet with him in Vegas during the Shrine game, and they're going to interview him to be their offensive line coach. So, again, Bill doesn't go too far, does he? Like, the guys that were on the staff, or he either coached, drafted, grabbed as an undrafted guy, whatever. But, yeah, Ryan Wendell was here from 08 to 15. I feel like every year he went into the year as a non-starter, and then somebody went down and he ended up playing a lot, whether it be guard, center, whatever. So maybe Ryan Wendell will be that guy. And so, again, he was here for some of the Bill O'Brien time as well. So that's one where maybe that's a Bill O'Brien hire as much, if not more, than even a Bill Belichick hire. But they clearly needed some help there, and Matt Patricia will be out of that job. So I don't know what the hell Matt Patricia's going to do, honestly. But yeah, this as for the Celtics, you look at it, their star guys have each had moments where not great, right? They kind of let you down a little bit, whether it was Tatum's turnovers, Jaylen Brown at the free throw line, which really just summed up, as even he said, well, a poor performance. Head coach Joe Mazzulla, another guy who, again, just during this mini little three-game losing streak snapshot, he's been under it a little bit as well. But he was sort of asked about, is this team just getting kind of bored? Like, they've been rolling teams, best record in the NBA. And even, again, they still have the best record in the NBA. So is it a matter of, like, how do you get up for these games at the end of January? Here was Mazzulla last night.
Just not getting bored with the simple plays, just doing the little things at work all the time. And sometimes that can be really hard over a long course of a season. And you just can't get bored doing those things. They're very, very simple. You know, the most simplest things breed the most, you know, rewards on both ends. And so you just can't get bored with doing simple things. I don't know. I don't think it's the time of year, because we just won 9 in a row. And then we went through some adversity with injuries. And then we just didn't play well tonight. So I don't think it has anything to do with that. I think it's just a matter of, you know, being good and being a great team is really, really hard. And you just have to work at it every single day, and you just got to do the small, boring things all the time.
I mean, 82 games is a grind, and that's why a lot of players, nobody plays 82 games, right? Like, I remember looking at the list last year of, like, the top 50 point per game guys in the league. Maybe it was the top 100, and there was like one or two played in every game. And, you know, again, it is a grind, but the Celtics are better suited, or at least should be better suited, to still play well, still win games when they're missing a guy or two. And obviously these last three games, that hasn't been the case. And a couple of weeks ago, I was actually at the point where I was like, you know, if everybody's healthy, and it's a huge if when you got guys like Time Lord, but if their whole roster is available, I almost didn't need a big pickup or any kind of pickup in less than 2 weeks at the trade deadline. But now I've kind of changed my tune. Now I'm thinking, you know what, they probably do need, and I know everybody's all over Jakob Poeltl from the Spurs, bringing another big guy. He's averaging almost a double-double. That, yes, okay, give me somebody else that's in there. And then this way, you can withstand these injuries a little bit better, or you can, you know, not play Time Lord 36 minutes, maybe not play Tatum and Brown as many minutes as you're playing those guys. Kind of ease up a little bit, make sure they're good to go come playoff time, and get one more guy into the rotation. I'm actually kind of okay with that at this point. Back to the phones. We got Seth down in Tennessee. What's up, Seth?
Hey, Rich.
Hey.
I want to talk about last night's Bruins game. It's the first chink in the armor that I've seen. You know, both teams were up for that game, I think. Mm-hmm. And the Lightning played an unbelievably disciplined game there. Their neutral zone play was amazing. It was like Jacques Lemaire's Devils in the 90s doing the neutral zone trap. And usually when you face that kind of a play, you know, you're left to dump and chase. But the Lightning, the D-men were up for that. And they usually managed to get the puck right out. They did a great job of, you know, getting the puck from low to high in their offensive zone. It's the first time I've seen a team that sort of found a formula that could really put a dent in Boston's attack, and that's something they need to look at, because going into the playoffs, you know how much better the Lightning will be in the playoffs.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's one of those teams for sure, Seth. Thanks for the call. That you look at, you're like, all right, well, the Bruins have had really good regular seasons before, and then they've gotten bounced out. We were looking at it the other night. I think it was the last two times that they were the President's Trophy winner, it was second round and out. Like, they didn't even make it to the Cup final that year and lose. Like, that wasn't the year that they played the Blues or the Blackhawks. So Tampa is, of course, going to be a threat. Like, if they play them, or feels like when they play them in the playoffs, that is going to be a threat. The one thing that I think is somewhat promising is, even though they found themselves down, you know, first period right away, they did have an answer each time, right? They were down 1-0, tied it up. They were down 2-1, tied it up. So they at least had that going for them. They're also not going to win every single game, right? It's crazy. I know that sounds crazy, but they're not going to win every single game. It feels like they were going to.
Was it Tuesday or Wednesday this week? We were going through and kind of projecting it out. And at that point, they had played 47 games. They were the quickest team in the NHL to get to 80 points. Quickest team ever. And they were on pace to have the best record or the most points. Again, hockey's kind of weird because they've had different... There were years where there were ties, and now there's the shootout and everything else. But they could have the most points in a regular season in the history of the NHL. And again, that's not after a good 10 games, 20 games, 30 games. That's we're past the halfway point, and they were on that kind of a run. And you look, you know, one step, you know, after that or closer, you got David Pastrnak is going to have 60 goals this year. Hampus Lindholm might have the best plus-minus in all of hockey. Linus might get the goalie triple crown. Like, they are loaded, and they have so much depth. They're going to finish the year with I don't even know how many 20-goal scorers. They are just an absolute wagon. So, you know, Seth calls in. He thinks that maybe Tampa has found something possible. Tampa's also an extremely talented team. They're moving back up the standings as well. So, I mean, that's one that you're going to have to watch out for. They're obviously tested. They're the team that really is just... They're going to get to the playoffs, see what happens. Maybe they'll maneuver the salary cap a little bit, whatever it takes, and find a way to be there once again. Celtics and Bruins are both in an interesting, similar spot where I think we know kind of what they are, and you're like, all right, kind of get to the playoffs. It was like with the Patriots for so many years. Like, oh, this is fun, but it's really going to come down to get them in the conference championship game. It feels like both are going to be, you almost give them one round, although it is more tough to do that in hockey, isn't it? Like, we see more upsets in the first round in hockey. But depending on who they draw, like, you feel really good about it. And you're like, all right, we know what these guys can do now. What's it going to be like in a few months come playoff time? Let's go to Mike in Randolph. He's up next here on WEEI. What's up, Mike?
Hey, Rich. How you doing, man?
I'm good.
Hey, listen, I miss you on middays. But,
yeah, me too.
Love to have your own show, man. But, hey, listen, I want to get into Missoula, right?
Yep.
And... I'm going to take, and again, I've been complaining about this with a couple of buddies, and they're 100% on board, but we haven't had many opportunities. But this is, he really scares me come playoffs, right? And I can remember, and I'm going to bring up a coach that I think is one of the best coaches in the league, maybe in the history, and that's Rick Carlisle, okay? Mm-hmm. And when a team goes on a 4-0, 6-0 run, timeout immediately, end the momentum. Missoula lets them play through, and there's a team going 8-0 run, 10-0 run, 12-0 run. Then they'll finally call a timeout. And you saw it in the two games he wasn't coaching, when Damon Sotomayor was coaching, I loved the way he managed the game. 4-0 run, nope, timeout, we're not going to have this. 6-0 run, nope, timeout, we're not going to have this. I'm really concerned with Missoula, you know, in a series against a Budenholzer or even a Doc as far as how he's managing this team, because I feel like he just lets them play too much. And your job as an NBA coach is to literally manage your rotation and manage your timeouts in the game itself. And I just don't think he does a good job of that. Last year, I thought Ime at first was the same way, but around like the new year, you saw Ime get a better grasp of handling everything. You're not seeing that in Missoula. I feel like you're seeing him just be stubborn and just stick to his ways, and I'm really concerned about that.
Mike, I'll tell you, it's a good call, and it's fair. It's completely fair. He took over a team. Now, a tough spot for him, admittedly, right? He's been an assistant for a couple of years, and you're getting ready for this year. You're the defending Eastern Conference champs, and then you get called in the office one day, and you're like, hey, we're going to need you to be the head coach. And he's like, how come? He's like, well, do I have a story for you? And then or maybe he knew about it. I don't know. But now Udoka's out, and he's in there right before the season starts, so that's tough. But I think all of your concerns are completely warranted because he took over an absolute wagon of a team, best roster in the NBA. And so I think you're going to win a lot of games, right? Like, you or I would win a lot of games if we said, all right, I'm going to start Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown and Marcus Smart. Like, you're going to win a bunch of games. But what does it look like when you do face a little bit of adversity? There hasn't really been a ton of it. This little stretch is we're starting to see some of it, and I think some of his moves or non-moves, right, whether you choose to call a timeout, don't call a timeout, what plays do you draw up, he's a little bit more in focus right now. And I think anytime you have a first-year head coach, it's absolutely a question. What's he going to be like in the playoffs? We don't know. There's no track record of him in the playoffs. Now, the same thing with Ime Udoka. And that one's a little bit different because that team, at least to me, it's different because they did face adversity. They sucked for half the season.
It was everybody was fully in their right to say you got to trade Jaylen Brown, you got to change something because it wasn't working until about this time last year, maybe a little bit earlier in the month, but you get the point. It was around then when they turned it around, and then they were nasty, and Udoka kind of hit his stride. The whole team hit their stride, and they went for it. This year, completely different. They sort of took some of the stuff they had under Udoka. They're kind of applying it now. But you're right. In the Eastern Conference, on the court, they might have the advantage most every single night. But then when you look to some of the benches, now I'm not going to go with Doc. Like, I don't think Doc's a great head coach. But Eric Spoelstra, great coach. Budenholzer, I guess you have to give it to him, although he was teetering a couple years ago, and then he goes and wins the title. So I think you have to give him a little bit of an advantage. So there are some pretty good head coaches that they might have to run across in this one. So, yeah, I think it's definitely fair. And maybe he could change. There's enough regular season games left. They have 32 more games that, all right, maybe Missoula can tinker with stuff. Maybe now all of a sudden it's a 7-0 run and now he's calling timeout. Or maybe, or at the very least, like, he's still communicating with the team. And that was one of the things that he said the other night was, yeah, I wouldn't have called timeout, but I wish I drew up a different play. Wish I called a different play. Like, all right, well, you're taking all this stuff and you need to be ready come playoff time. Because that would be an absolute killer. Because coaching in basketball is important, but it's not like it is in the NFL. So if you end up losing a game or two because of coaching, again, you go back to some of those Brad Stevens teams where they would go up against Nick Nurse. And Nick Nurse is coaching circles around him. And then Eric Spoelstra's doing the same thing. You're like, oh, man. Like, on the court, you're like, I kind of like the Celtics' talent more than, say, the Miami Heat's talent. But if the tiebreaker ends up going to the coach, that's tough. That is absolutely tough. All right, you can join the program. Really, whatever from the week is on the table as well. Bruins and Celtics both lose last night. Some of the Patriots coaching situations. And, of course, the NFL Conference Championship Sunday is upon us. 617-779-7937. But when we come back, it's time for the Bet du Jour here on the Rich Keefe Show.
Now, more of the Rich Keefe Show on WEEI.
And streaming everywhere on the Odyssey app.
What is the soup du jour?
It's the soup of the day.
That sounds good. I'll have that.
Time now for the bet du jour. What is that? Great question. It's the bet of the day. This time, every night, we give you a winner. At least that's the idea. And multiple winners is also what we're going after. And that's all Ben has been doing thus far. This is going to feel like I'm jinxing it. But Ben hit the over in the Celtics-Knicks game, which was hilarious because I think it was right on the number or a point below when they went to overtime.
I needed a point to get it.
Amazing. So as long as they didn't end in a tie, then he was going to win the game. So Ben is now 11-4 and is riding a three-game winning streak right now.
He's on fire!
So that is nothing to sneeze at. I, however, have been hovering around 500 all year long, 9-9 after I took the Celtics minus 8.5. At one point, early in the game, it looked pretty good, and then it did not. And I thought I had maybe a slim chance in overtime, but I did not. So 9-9 is my record. 11
they did go
four.
Up by 5. I thought you had a chance. Yeah, they were up 5, and I was like, oh, here we go.
And, they were up 5, and I forget who it was. Somebody rimmed out a 3, which would have been, I was like, if they make an 8, then they get fouled. I'm like, that might cover in overtime, but no, alas, it did not happen. Now, Friday, we sort of bend the rules a little bit. Bet du jour, again, would signify bet of the day. However, we're not on again until Monday at 6, so we have the whole weekend. Anything you want, which is a million things to choose from, whether you want to pick a random game tonight, anything going on this weekend, Monday morning, for heaven's sakes. Maybe there's a cricket match or something you want to bet on. Celtics-Lakers play tomorrow. Bruins and Panthers tomorrow. Bruins-Hurricanes on Sunday. The Royal Rumble. NFC-AFC Conference Championship game. So, Ben, the floor is yours. What is your bet du jour?
I am going with the AFC Championship game.
Okay.
I am taking the first half over.
Wow.
23.5 points.
Now you're just getting kind of, you're showing off.
Well, I think the total, I think, was like 48 or something. That made me a little nervous because I feel like the Bengals, the second half, they make great adjustments and they usually shut down the teams. And I don't know how it works, but I'm assuming Mahomes will get, you know, his ankle shot up in the first, and it might wear off by the second.
Oh, I like your thinking.
I don't
thinking.
Know how that works.
Yeah,
I
yeah,
probably
yeah.
should have, like, consulted a doctor for this.
Do we have a resident
theory,
doctor?
But
we have a wrestling insider. We have a hockey expert. We don't have a doctor yet. That's our
no,
next thing.
We need
thing.
To find that. So for these God. Important questions of when someone rolls their ankle, a professional athlete rolls their ankle, when they get shot up,
well,
will it wear off by the second?
In Varsity Blues, when they wanted Lance Harbor to shoot up again, his teammates had to come in there and be like, no, coach, he's not getting that done. And that was seemed like a one-off. A big old needle, they come in there, and he'd gotten that shot so many times, and they finally was like, enough is enough.
He's yeah, once he gets surgery, they show him is that there's correct. Scar tissue all up in place.
Terrible. He had a ride to, was it Florida State on the line,
yeah,
too? Like just yeah, a big... Big opportunity for Lance, which didn't go his way. So you're going first half over. I like that. I like that very much. I'm also going to go with the conference championship game, and we're going to get into detail with this next hour. But I think the best bet, the one I feel the best about, is Philadelphia minus 2.5. It's inside that field goal number, and I really think that Philly's better. Like, I know everybody's excited about the story that San Francisco is, where they have Mr. Irrelevant and he's leading them, and they haven't lost since Halloween. They haven't played a lot of great teams, by the way. And I think the Eagles, their pass rush is off the charts. Like, they get, are they like third all time in sacks? Whatever.
That sounds right. Yeah, it's up there. It's top five. I know that.
It's nuts. It's not just like for this season or for the last couple of years. Like, they go crazy after the quarterback. And at some point, having Brock Purdy, I feel like, is going to catch up to you.
I keep saying that. And that was like,
I know
my
they
reasoning.
Keep winning.
That was my reasoning for last weekend. And it was like, well, Dak actually played worse than Purdy. So it's not like Purdy played good.
No, he
but
did.
But Dak played way worse.
He was worse. In Philadelphia at home. I'll take, again, I think both of these games are going to be really good. But I just feel a little bit better about Philadelphia getting there. They can also beat you in a variety of ways. So if San Francisco takes away the run a little bit, well, you got A.J. Brown, who's all pro, and Devontae Smith, who had one of the quietest, like, 1,100-yard seasons in football. And then if they take those guys away, like, they'll just run it. Like, Jalen Hurts will run it. Miles Sanders had a great year. So that's a good, I mean, every team is good at this point. But I like Philly, and I like how they match up against San Francisco. But then again, Brock Purdy's been proving people wrong for a while, and maybe he'll prove me wrong as well. So we'll get into those games coming up. I also, and we mentioned this yesterday, so Bruins-Panthers, we can all watch that one tomorrow. Big game for the Bees, see how they bounce back, also against a good team. And then even a better team, the Carolina Hurricanes are the second-best record in the NHL, or at least in the Eastern Conference. It's at 5 o'clock on Sunday. That is terrible.
What's wrong with that? Come on, 5 o'clock, perfect timing.
Sweet, get in there. You get your an early dinner after that. No, 5 o'clock. So the first game kicks off at 3. The second game kicks off at 6:30. So the NFC Championship game is going to be wrapping up, and then here comes Bruins hockey. And then if the game is good, like, it still bleeds right into the AFC title game. So anyway, I think a lot of people are going to just have to DVR that bad boy, and we could pick it up on Monday, although I'm sure there's going to be a lot of talk about who's playing in the Super Bowl. And Royal Rumble, Saturday night. Now, again, that's not as easy to bet on. That's more of your offshore books. You can get in. There's a lot of lines, though, on that. Who's going to win? Crazy odds. The odds move all over the place because people have knowledge of it, or they think they have knowledge of it. And so
it is impressive for, sorry to say this, a scripted
yes.
show
yeah.
how they're able to keep some of this stuff under wraps, and like, you'd think this is something that people would easily be able to,
because everybody's knee-jerk reaction is like, you can't bet on that, it's scripted. And you'd say, all right, well, tell me who's gonna win all the things. They're like, well, I don't know, but somebody knows. It's like, yeah, but I think they make it pretty clear to them that if they start betting on it, they're gonna get in a lot of trouble. The same is true for, like, a lot of these reality shows, and some are taped, like, long in advance or whatever. They're not live, and yet there'll still be odds on, like, who's gonna win Survivor. Same thing. Like, they all have to sign, like, you know, NDAs or whatever, and then you could still do it. But I do remember one time, it was like WrestleMania, however many years ago, when Undertaker finally lost. He had, like, the greatest streak in the history of sports. He had never lost at WrestleMania, and he was going up against Brock Lesnar, and he was obviously a huge, huge favorite. And then the closer you got to it, like, right before Mania started, he was actually an underdog. So clearly word had got out somehow, some way, and then he actually lost, and people lost their minds.
Let's go to the phones here before we get to the top of the hour. We got Mark in Amherst on the Celtics. Mark, what do you got?
Congratulations first, Rich. So I want to bring back the Miles Turner talk, and I know that has been overplayed a lot, but going down the stretch now, like, it just makes all the sense in the world. You send out the expiring contracts, the Gallinari, the Blake Griffin. I'm sorry, you got to send Pritchard probably too, and a bunch of, two or three unprotected picks. And you bring in Miles Turner, and that does multiple things. One, you bring him in, you lock him up long term. Says to Jaylen and Tatum, now you got 3A players to build around the next 3 years. The other thing, too, is Al Horford is getting – we love him, but that baton has to be handed off sooner rather than later. There's, you don't know what's going to happen week to week, game to game with Rob Williams. And the other thing is you don't want to be put over the barrel with Grant Williams during the offseason as a role player. You have Turner as a stretch big, basically a younger version of Al Horford going into this playoff run. I like their chances a lot better. And there's the TPEs, there's these expiring contracts.
Oh, yeah.
There's ways to get this done, and it makes all the sense in the world now to be aggressive about it.
Mark, go ahead.
Because if we come really close, but we just miss again, every time this happens, I feel like with all these B and C and D players, I think it leaves the door open for Tatum and Brown to, kind of be looking around elsewhere. If you bring in like a Turner, that says to them that, okay, we're going for this. We got 3 years in a row where we can legitimately be winning championships.
Mark, thanks for the phone call. I would disagree with that last part. Like, I feel like those two guys should know they're going for championships. I mean, they were in the finals last year. They are the favorite to get back there again this year. They went out and added Malcolm Brogdon. Like, they're spending a lot of money. So I think that message is clear. But I like the Miles Turner idea. I liked it going back a couple of years ago. I thought Danny Ainge screwed it up when Gordon Hayward, there was a sign and trade available to bring in Miles Turner and Doug McDermott, and he didn't do it. And then all he got was a trade player exception for Gordon Hayward, and that really kind of went sideways. Nothing really came too much of that. So I like Turner. He's on the last year of his deal. You could get something to happen. First round picks, trade them all away. Like, you don't need them. If you're the Celtics, that's probably going to be pick 30 overall anyway, practically a second rounder. So I like the idea of Miles Turner. Expiring contract, big guy. He can shoot a little bit. He can rebound. He can block shots. So I'm all in on that. I think it just, to Mark's point, you have Horford and Time Lord right now. Both are good. How many minutes, how many games are they going to be able to give you between now and their last game of the playoffs? So I'm all in it for Miles Turner for sure. I like that one. 617-779-7937. We gave you our bet du jour there. We're going to get into this NFL Conference Championship Sunday here coming up. Plus, if you have any thoughts on the Bruins and Celtics, who both fell last night, all ears on that. 617-779-7937. It's the Rich Keefe Show here on WEEI.